Yes, welcome into hour number two. And as I just mentioned to Stephen Donnelly before the news, we have the Wicklow-wide coffee morning on the way. So that will be next Friday in various venues right across the county in aid of the Cancer Support Centres and the Wicklow Hospice. So put that in your diary. Now it's Friday, which means we have the 11:05 panel. And this morning we'll discuss some of the latest developments in technology and discover how these innovations have the potential to transform your home and your work life. From AI to smart home devices, we'd explore how technology can enhance convenience and efficiency in everyday life. And boy, do we need that sometimes. We'll also learn how technology is fostering creativity and collaboration in the workplace, leading to unprecedented levels of productivity and success. And before the end of the programme, we'll be joined in studio, because we need it, by Fintan McCormack, a.k.a. the wine guy from O'Brien's. Now, joining us this morning is Josh Loveridge, who is CEO of Loveridge Digital, full service agency. Spoken to Josh many a time since we met him first of all in Bray Institute of Further Education, and he's gone on to be involved in the world of technology, which he'll explain what he does in just a second. Damien Mully is from Mully Communications. Good morning, Damien.
Good morning, Declan.
Good morning. He's often our go-to person to discuss the various world of what's happening in the world of technology. And Sean Duke, who is the cool scientist. Good morning to you, Sean.
Thanks a lot.
Good morning. And I hope that you all have headphones so you'll be able to hear Damien when we get to discuss things as regards what our agenda is, as outlined already. Now then, let's go straight into maybe finding a little bit about yourselves. Josh, tell us, remind us about how you came to technology and came out of Bray Institute of Further Education and then into what you do now.
Yeah, so I'll give it a quick rundown. So started in Bray, Biffy, doing digital media and gaming, essentially. From there, moved on to do my postgrad in service-orientated architectures in the University of Leicestershire. And from there, I built a company called Loveridge Digital and Stratton Studios, and I've been growing it since. Pretty much what we do there is we're very well known in the entertainment sector, so we're building a bunch of games for brands that you'd know, like, you know, the Unity technologies of the world, you know, the all those type of things. So big games like Hearthstone, Call of Duty, everything like that. So company size right now is about 200 guys. So a couple offices around the world, one here, one in Australia, and then one in Sarasota in Florida. So I've been just fostering the company and growing it since then, essentially.
Yeah, how long did it take you, having come out of college, to actually start all this?
So it was kind of running in parallel. So the first like 2-3 years of the company, I was still studying and growing it. It was funny. Actually published my first game on Xbox while I was still in Biffy, which is hilarious. But yeah, so about 2 to 3 years, then I kind of just rolled out of there and just kept moving and kept scaling the company.
Yeah, and I mean, you go around the world and things like that. How do you run something like this but live in Wicklow, in the hills of Wicklow? I mean, people might say, oh, you have to be in sort of a mega corporation in Silicon Valley or something.
So it's funny that you say that. Out of last year, I've probably spent about half my time outside of Ireland. So mostly in San Francisco, LA, or Australia, New York, any of these major cities and major conferences that you need to attend. While I would say that we live in a connected world now, you can do anything from anywhere, but you do need to make the trips to go in person, meet people, because there's nothing you know, better than a handshake. Always works well.
And are there jobs?
Yep.
Are there sustainable jobs?
It's the gaming industry is a very interesting one. The entertainment sector as a whole is an interesting one. We're a bit of a black sheep on that front. Like, everyone else is firing people right now. There's massive layoffs, massive reduction in workforce. We're hiring aggressively. I always believe there's a gap in the market and there's a way to do things differently. And when you look at things from outside the box and you do good work and, you know, people are happy with the product, then you know, you just keep growing. So there's sustainable jobs in the entertainment sector, sustainable jobs in the gaming industry, especially for, you know, people situated in Ireland. Ireland's actually, you know, strategically poised to be very successful in the entertainment sector when it comes to, like, even cloud enterprise software, because we've got our really attractive corporation tax. We've got kind of like as the gateway to Europe, and then the time zones actually aren't too bad when you compare them to, like, you know, dealing with EST or PST as well. So it's actually quite attractive. And the great thing is too is that Irish kind of software and engineer costs are lower to do. It's cheaper than to do it in the US. You know, it's about anywhere between 30 to 40% cheaper to scale teams here than it is over in the States. But the quality level is not 30 to 40% less. It's actually on par with the US when it comes to, you know, the kind of skill level of engineers that you can find and source and build in Ireland. So it's actually a really nice place to foster a software company. And not many people know this, but one of the biggest outsourcing game companies in the world is based in Leopardstown, which is Keyword Studios. They've got 18,000 employees. Like, there's a lot of big tech companies are, you know, built here, scale here, because it's very attractive to do that. And, it's just going to continue to happen. And hopefully we're following in their footsteps and, you know, we'll be the next on the line for that.
Very impressive, Josh. Damien Mully in Cork. Hello to you, Damien.
Good morning, Declan.
How did you get involved in technology and what do you do?
Okay, my father brought home a BBC microcomputer, I think, when I was 7, and he built his own payroll software for his company. And I started playing with the computer and reverse engineering the program and making my own stuff. And then I got computer games and I kind of started reverse engineering. So I was always interested in, I guess, how things worked more than playing with the tech itself. So I went off and did electronic engineering in college. But again, I was more interested in the computers that we're using. And it kind of just went from there, really. I was just playing the whole time, new technology, using that, seeing what was the potential of it, like what are the harms of it or what are the goods of it. And I kind of, yeah, I fell into that space. It wasn't a conscious decision to be so big into tech. But it just, I guess I found my space, or I found my home there.
You were the first person I ever came across that was active on Twitter.
Yeah, it was, I guess, very early days, the first couple of weeks when Twitter kicked off, and a couple of Irish people that were big into tech and were connected, I guess, through blogging to people in Silicon Valley. We joined up as well. And as it took off, and then as what happened was, I guess, a lot of tech companies would launch on Twitter as well. And you're connected to media, tech media as well. And yeah, so I think I've been on Twitter like 17 years now. So however old Twitter is, minus about 2 months, I think. And I've been on Twitter ever since.
Right.
But it's changed, obviously, drastically in the past 2 years.
That's older than Josh, I think, is it?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. I see people joining every now and again on Twitter, and, like, they have, like, a number at the end of their thing, and it's like, is that, like, your favourite football player's number? They're like, no, that's my date of birth. And I feel very old then.
Sean Duke, good morning to you.
Hi, Declan.
Good morning. And, of course, you're the cool scientist, so there's different aspects of technology and how we use it that you're interested in. How did you get involved in science and technology?
Yeah, I had little choice because I had two parents who were scientists. My dad was a professor in UCD in zoology for years, and my mum was a secondary school biology teacher, so it was all about science in our house. And luckily enough, I enjoyed it myself, you know. I went and did science in UCD myself and left there in the late 80s, long time ago, probably around when before Josh was born, which makes me seem very old. So what I did then was I got interested in writing, which was something that really wasn't in my family at all. I just got this notion that I'd be interested in writing. So I was trying to figure out, could I combine my science interest with my writing interest, and I came up with this idea of science journalism, which was just taking off actually at that stage. So I went to the States in the early 90s and I did a science journalism master's, and I came back in the mid 90s then, and from that point on I've been a science journalist, I guess, for the most part, until the last couple of years where I've been in DCU on the other side of the fence, but not too far off, because I'm still explaining what scientists do, what technology people do, trying to get it out there into the media. So, yeah, that's, I guess, I'm a communicator of science, is my interest.
Right. Well, that's our panel today. And we're going to explore some issues in just a second. And thanks to Josh, to Sean and Damien. Back in just a second. Okay. It is Sean Duke, Josh Loveridge and Damien Mully who joins us this morning for the 11.05. We're looking at technology. You know, how do you stay up to date, Josh, with everything changing? We were talking about, say, AI becoming the topic of conversation, and people say, oh, AI is everywhere. And other people say, well, it's been there for 20 years or something, but it seems to be growing and the importance of it seems to be growing and there's new developments all the time. How would you, for example, keep up to date with what's going on?
So I suppose my whole process for keeping up to date with technology as a whole has changed majorly over the last 2 years. Previously it was, you know, being on top of Twitter, blogs, different apps that are coming out, and just industry peers, talking to them and figuring out where things are going. Now it's primarily, you know, I'm at every trade show that there is when it comes to really major like tech stuff. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm on the beat of the pulse on that side. I can see what's coming down the pipe. Like, you know, AI as a whole, and it's such a buzzword because, you know, generative AI language models and all this sort of thing has been around for years. Like, people say it's moved so quickly. It's actually moved really slowly. It's just gotten better at the time, and it's gotten to a point that people care now. So technology actually moves relatively slowly, and if you just keep, you know, your feet on the pulse when it comes to where things are going and are in that kind of networking group and sphere, you can actually stay up to date really quickly. One of my favorite conferences a year is CES, which is typically in Vegas. It's where you see a lot of the innovations, especially coming out of, like, you know, China, a lot of these areas where they are investing a lot in heavy R&D. Like, you know, at the company we have a whole R&D department as well, so, you know, now I'm at a point where I've guys that are kind of helping
research and development,
yeah,
is it?
That are helping me, you know, investigate these new technologies that are coming out. Like, we have a lot of tech coming out, like, you know, polyspatial technology with mixed reality. We've seen from Apple with their Apple Vision Pro, and people are starting to infuse that with generative language models now as well.
What does all that mean?
I'm sure a lot of people have seen Apple have done this new headset. It's like a VR headset, but they're kind of changing it a little bit. Mixed reality. So if you've ever seen, you know, the classic Blade Runner movies of the world where, like, holograms are popping up around you and stuff like that, that is what that is. It's starting to become a thing, and it's starting to become a reality, and people are starting to infuse that with AI or large language models, just pushing from there.
Yeah, and Sean, I mean, you come across a lot of innovation in DCU. How do you see the world of technology and science linking up together, and how do you see developments?
Yeah, well, you say AI, there's developments on AI to do with labs and how people interact with labs, because at the moment there's a limited amount of space basically for a lab. But if you can have a virtual lab, then you can test things that might be dangerous actually, and you can make mistakes in the virtual world, and you don't have to use, you're not limited by a certain amount of lab space. So that's one thing. The other thing is the generative AI in general. They're a little bit worried about the students using that. What are we going to do, you know, in terms of producing essays and stuff like that? How do we know that it's actually produced by one of the students rather than an AI? So that's an issue that's kind of live.
Is that not open then to a program that can recognize, you know, if you're doing something like that and faking something, that it leaves an opening for more technology to be the watchdog of it?
Yeah, be the watchdog, and then you have a kind of an arms race between the watchdog software and the other software. So I guess that's part of the thing. In terms of, say, important things like our health and new drugs, AI is very important because it can actually do things like identify new drug targets much quicker than we can in other ways. So you might have drugs that are used for different things, but they have haven't worked out for various reasons, so they try and repurpose them into some other disease, and that is a very slow process, but the AI can do that by identifying how a particular candidate might work for a particular disease. That can all speed things up greatly. The other thing it can do is images, say analysis of images, say to do with cancer or different types of diseases. If there's a lot of imagery, people get tired and they can't recognise something, whereas the AI doesn't get tired, it doesn't have any kind of bias, and it'll pick out things on a slide, no matter how many things you throw at it, and identify stuff like that. So there's lots of different ways, but I mean, the main thing, as Josh says, is that these things move slowly. It's like AI has just appeared out of nowhere. I mean, this has been around since the 1960s. There were concerns in the 1960s about AI. You know, 2001 Space Odyssey and HAL, the computer, killing the astronauts, or, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a long... These concerns date back a long time. And suddenly everything has come together now. And I think maybe people need to just stay calm and look at what the technology is actually doing, because a lot of it is still quite stupid. You know, it's called artificial intelligence, but if you've tried to interact with a chatbot, you know, it's not a great conversation, basically. And there's a list of things that it can say. So it's very limited at the moment. And of course, there's lots of force for good. There's lots of things that AI is doing. We always hear of the downside, but I see it being applied right across science, right across everything. And it, as far as I can see, 99.9% of the time, it's something good that it's being used for.
Yeah, Damien, you know, it's making, you know, this technology making much of a difference. I mean, do you worry about jobs for the future?
Yeah, I think what's happening right now is everyone is adding the AI label to everything. And they're bringing AI into everything when you really don't need it for a lot of the stuff. And it'll disappear into the background eventually. But what we're seeing now is companies are in what used to be outsourcing to India and other developing countries. That's where the jobs went before. Now AI is being used to do the same thing, and people are being made redundant for various jobs that AI is taking over. But it's a mess and it's not working properly. But people or companies are thinking about their bottom line. And the same way when all the outsourcing happened, it messed things up and people were onshoring again because of all these mess ups. AI, I think, is going to happen the same way. So right now, there's about 20%, I guess, of AI technology that's out there is absolutely fantastic and is going to change things and will improve the world. And about 80% is scammers and bluffers using AI to do things. Whereas if I remember about 15 years back, you had these voice to text services and you'd ring up and it would transcribe what you were doing and you're going, oh my God, this is amazing. And actually what it turned out was it was a call center in India where people were actually listening to what you said and they were actually typing it and sending it back, pretending it was tech. And I think that's what we're having right now with AI, but it'll settle down in a couple of years. But what we'll have then is for a small company where you couldn't do something before because you needed tons of computers and resources, you needed 20 people to sort through a load of data, good AI will do it for you and will make you, the small business, very efficient. So you will, without being completely a futurist and very, very positive, small companies in Ireland will be able to reach for the stars way more now because of AI when it's used more efficiently. So it'll be very good, I think, for small companies and very good for people with ideas where up to now, the tech wasn't there for them or the money wasn't there for them to be able to do it. Now they can do it off a laptop.
I mean, going back years, the computer is going to make everybody redundant and things. Just new job specifications came out. There were different jobs. You know, maybe the old jobs became redundant, but there were new ones. And do you see that happening with AI as well?
As you said, like everyone was worried about computers and now we've got a computer in our pocket the whole time. We've got a computer on our wrist and there's computers all around us. So it's going to, I think, open up way more possibilities. But I guess the issue we've seen even in the past week is algorithms and abusive algorithms and AI using algorithms and we don't know how they use it. Because like we've got these new devices, like on CES was mentioned, consumer show. It's like a little pin, like the badge that people in Star Trek use, and when they tap on it and they can ask questions, those devices have now been released and they're using AI and they're connected to everything that you have, like your Spotify, your email, and that little badge dictates your day. And it's when these things go wrong, that's where the issues happen. So it's, again, it's very early days and it's cowboy country a lot of the time. But when things settle down, when people see the real possibilities of what an individual can do with this tech, it'll be absolutely fantastic.
Well, turning to the negative side of that, and you mentioned algorithms there. I mean, if you get a blank canvas of a device and you're not signed up to any platform, you can sign up and then you're interested in football or something and you press, oh, I'm interested in that particular posting by somebody football, and you'll start getting all the football commentary right across the world and you'll be well up to date. But if you use it for things you get involved in that you might have a prejudice towards that, you know, might be disturbing, you'll keep getting those and have a vision of the world that looks like that. Would that be fair to say that?
Yeah, it is. I don't want to hog the panel here, but that is very fair. I've done it myself. Like Primetime did it where they pretended to be young men and they joined TikTok and all of a sudden they were getting Andrew Tate content and misogyny and so on. And I did it before with a Facebook account, brand new account, new email, different Wi-Fi connection. And I clicked on one far right update from an account. And now this account gets suggestions connecting to people and people that you see at the protest, the type of people that were outside Roderick O'Gorman's house last night. That's what Facebook is suggesting to me just from a single click. I haven't done anything else on that Facebook account. And that's what it's pushing into it. And so we don't know how these things work. So this happens the whole time. And if you think about it, Myanmar, that like the atrocities that happened there, Facebook was blamed for that because of that algorithm and because of what it was pushing into people's timelines. So when you have a company that controls a timeline to 2 or 3 billion people, a tiny little tweak, like a one thousandth of a tweak, can actually impact lives.
Right. Josh, how does that sound like to you?
It's a very interesting discussion topic, because at the end of the day, no matter how you look at this, and I think a lot of people attribute one thing I always got told, and it's very true, don't attribute to malice what you could attribute to stupidity. And when I say that, I mean that a lot of people say the algorithm's evil and that it's out to get us and that it's doing this sort of thing. All the algorithm doing is, it doesn't care. It's doing its job. Its job is to serve people content that they are interested in using the data that has been gathered to date. The problem, it's more of a policy thing with regards to putting pressure on a lot of bigger companies to do that. But it sounds terrible to say, but they're never going to change anything unless their bottom lines increase to do it. You know, so it really comes down to, you know, everyone can stand and say, okay, well, this is terrible. The only thing that's going to drive actionable change is if these companies are incentivized to monitor their various different algorithms, how it's pushing across. Because really all it's doing is it's dog food. All these algorithms doing is it's just like a mirror. It's just spitting back what you give it. And whatever you give it, it will spit back. I will say, though, there is been a lot of gains over the last 12 months in the kind of user experience, trust and safety side of things. You know, it's, and a lot of large language models are being used to actually detect a lot of this malicious content that would be, you know, seen as either not fruitful or just not conducive to a, you know, a good upstanding citizen. So that is starting to happen. Language models are starting to be used to fight it, because previously, here's how the moderation was done. It was a team in overseas, like India or something like that, and they were sitting there moderating content and saying, okay, that's bad, that's bad, that's bad, that's bad. And you had to scale up. Look at Elon Musk when he got into Twitter. He fired 80% of the company because it was all trust moderation stuff. So people are starting to fight it. The problem is it's just not enough money behind it right now. It's going to take time. You know, anytime you're innovating and there's new stuff that's happening and you're not governed by, you know, like legislation, it's not going to move. It's just going to be slow. So
yeah, Sean.
Yeah, well, without regulation, you can have all kinds of abuses going on. So, you know, and I know in DCU, for example, they're looking at, say, online abuse of children a lot online happening in the Philippines, and then linking it back to people who are based here in Ireland. And essentially, you have people arrested in the Philippines that are doing this, but the people here in Ireland are let go, do what they want. So, you know, that's not a good situation. You need to have some kind of regulation of what's going on. The bullying, you know, I've had experience of that with my kids, one of them. That's horrible when it happens. So there's a kind of a wariness now that, and a lack of trust among certain people with the technology. So I would say the technology needs to restore that somehow, and that means tighter regulation in certain areas. I think there's things happening at European level, but not happening very quickly. And the technology companies, from what I gather, the researchers tell me, you know, they say, listen, can you help us with this online abuse, for example? And they say, oh yes, that shouldn't be happening, and then nothing happens. You know, so it's going to have to be pushed. We're going to have to realise that tech companies are great, but they also have to be regulated.
Yeah, what do you think of that, Damien?
I mean, to be very blunt, Twitter, Facebook, all the social media networks make money from hate. They make money from abuse, because the more interactions around hateful content, the more ads that are served. So it's not about incentivizing them to fix things. It's about, I guess, disincentivizing them. If they're making money from this, then that's an issue. And it's while the algorithm chooses what it can do or what it should do, someone that programs that algorithm says engagement is the goal here, the more engagement. So if this is getting engagement, push it out to more people, because that'll get more engagement. So, I mean, they're making a ton of money. And at the same time, I think the likes of Meta, TikTok last week laid off a load of people, and a lot of them were working in content moderation. And like, if you, great example is, if you go on now to look at any of the news reports about what happened to Roderick O'Gorman's house last night, look at the comments under it. I mean, really hateful, nasty, defamatory content. And the algorithm's deciding that that content is okay. It no matter, like, I don't know how you've done, but I report stuff on Twitter every day. And the system comes back going, no, it's fine.
But there's free speech, isn't there? There's free speech.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We accept that you have an issue with that, but no. And like, even, I don't want to be too negative, but if you have a blue tick now on Twitter, if you get a lot of engagement around things that you do, Elon Musk will give you a percentage of the ad revenue around the engagement on your content. So, of course, people are going to create content that's emotional, and that gets a reaction, because the more you troll and trigger people, the more money you're going to make on Twitter nowadays.
That was your point, Josh. It's all money, really. It's,
yep.
You can't regulate this. You've got to disincentivize, and in fact, Damien used those words, but it's all about money.
Yeah, unfortunately. At the end of the day, you have to really take a step back and say, what is the core underlying issue here? Before we had technology, we had similar grifters in similar fashions, like, you know, with, you know, various media news outlets pushing content to people that was, you know, I suppose, shocking or, you know, against the grain to drive engagement. When you incentivize someone to get a rise out of someone and they make money out of it, they're just going to keep doing it more. It's unfortunate we live in a capitalist society, and when you live in a capitalist society, people play capitalist games. And if, you know, if they're making direct money from it, they're going to keep doing it, because that drives their share price, that gets them the end of quarters, and that goes from there. The only way to battle that is to play at their exact same game, is regulation, you know, more disincentivize them for doing bad things and incentivize them for doing good things, and really focus and scale them from there. But even if all of this was fixed, tomorrow there would be another thing that would spin up, people doing the exact same thing. It's just people. You know, when money's involved, people, you know, the green-eyed monster comes out, as they say.
Okay. Well, we're going to look at some positive things of technology and where the world is going, and things that could help us, in just a second in our final part of the 11:05. Sean Tuke, the cool scientist. You heard Josh Loveridge there from at Loveridge Digital, full-service agency, and Damien Mully from Mully Communications. Back in just a second.
The 1105 on East Coast FM's Morning Show.
Joining us this morning, Sean Duke, the cool scientist, Josh Loveridge, CEO of Loveridge Digital, and Damien Mully from Mully Communications. So let's sort of change a little bit up the mood a bit as regards, you know, positives. Which things are exciting you at the moment, Josh? Which things are coming through? What do you see innovation-wise in the next while? Maybe something we'll all be using.
Yeah, I'm a big component. There's two major areas that I'm really super excited for right now. Web GPU technology, which is hardware acceleration in web browsers. Essentially, what's that mean? If any played all Flash experiences or experienced Flash back in the day when Adobe had it, that is coming back in a new way. So essentially, you can utilize your full power of your computer in the browser. So it's going to.
So what does that give me now?
What it will mean
on my computer. What's new?
What that will mean is now you can theoretically have a full experience on a website without downloading an app. That's pretty much what it means. So it's going to mean less bloat on your phone. You know, if you're going into an event or whatever, and there's an event app, you can just scale that directly in the browser, because previously there was big limitations there. So that is a massive area. It's just going to make things funner, cooler, and easier to access. One button click and you're in. No downloads, no sign-ups. Make it handy. And Google's invested a lot in that tech.
So it's always there.
Yeah, always there. You just log in with a click on a link and you're in. So it's a big area that's getting a lot of R&D from Google, and it's starting to roll out, which is super cool. So there's that area. And then the next area is mixed reality and Apple Vision Pro, what Apple's doing on that side. While the barrier to entry to that is a little higher, once the market leader comes and does it, everyone else starts to follow.
What will that give me?
Well, what that is going to enable and give you is it's going to now open the door for people to do things they couldn't previously do, like essentially put on a pair of glasses and see, you know, your social experiences directly in front of you, do physical training. It's being used by surgeons, by a lot of people to actually train. It's actually being used in labs as well to do a bunch of simulation work, stuff like that. And really, it's enabling you to think of it this way. If you could put on a pair of headphones and have a full home cinema experience without having to go to the cinema, that's pretty, pretty cool. So they're going to start. That's really becoming a big thing. Now really where we're at is, because if you put on the headset right now, super bulky and heavy. It's hard to keep it on for a few hours. But over the next, 12, 24 months, we're going to start to see new SKUs coming out where they're going to be lighter and push from there. You know, Google did this many years ago with their Google Glass. It was too early. The tech was too early. It didn't work out well and the market didn't take it. But with the Apple Vision Pro coming out, I feel like that is going to become a big thing. So new, cool tech that's coming out, which is going to be fun.
Right. Damien?
For me, it's smart bands. And we've got smart watches that do all these things with health. But the breakthrough in being able to monitor your blood glucose now from just a smart band, temperature is already there, heart rate and so on. I think that's going to be very important for the general population, but also for an aging population. So if you got your parents to wear one of these bands, you can see how well they're doing all day long. If they trip and have a fall, if they've enabled it, you'll get an alert for that. So I think this idea of just monitoring and how we're doing, because sometimes when people's health declines, we don't notice it because it's a slow decline. Whereas with these smart bands, they can see it happening and they can alert you to it. Like we've little things like the Apple Watch can tell you your heart is you're going to kind of some kind of defib thing here, defibrillation, so you need to get to see a cardiologist now, or you need to get to the hospital. Or we've seen where someone has a fall on a bike or crash on a bike and they're actually unconscious, and the watch rings like 999 and like calls an ambulance for them. So I think that just all these things that are going to be just on a wrist and will monitor people's health, I think that'll make a huge impact to the general population. And we're talking like one or two more years, and that band can do blood pressure, heart rate, temperature, everything. And like temperature, for example, just to go off on one, temperature and monitoring temperature is really important in health. So if deviations of your temperature, if it goes up by like a quarter of a degree or goes down by a quarter of a degree, that can be symptoms of something else is happening. So when we monitor that, it can actually be very good. It can be a very preventative thing for health.
Okay, I'll be out of touch because I don't wear any jewellery at all, including watches. But there you go. So I need to adapt myself to the new technology. Sean, what are you excited about? What's being developed?
Yeah, following on from Damien there, really, I was going to mention something in a similar area, this whole idea of sensors being used on the body. And I know one thing we're developing in DCU is this volatiles or little gases that are given off by the skin. One of our researchers is looking at that in terms of what those gases or volatiles, as they're called, tell you about a person's health. So essentially, how you smell can show how healthy you are, and they're going to, the vision for the future is that people will wear these constantly, and it would also be able to pick up maybe the very early signs of disease. So, you know, if you can pick it up at a very early stage, then you can intervene and treat disease. So these would be tiny little sensors that would be worn constantly. Now, it is very futuristic, but they've started to think about this and work on it. So I think that's one area. And also the whole area of personalised medicine and genomics, what it's called, which is essentially that, you know, you look at your DNA, your individual DNA, and you can figure out what likelihood is it that I'm going to get a particular disease in the future. So you can make predictions about that.
Oh, insurance companies would be delighted.
They'd be delighted. But also you can get medicines possibly that are aimed specifically at your cancer, you know, personalised medicine. So all of that stuff. There's always a downside, but there's always an upside.
Right. Okay. In 45 seconds, so 15 seconds each, should we be scared of the future? Josh?
No, we should be very excited.
Okay. All happening. Sean?
Yeah, very excited, but, you know, maybe 5% of me is wary too.
Okay. Damien?
Have a healthy level of cynicism, but see what the potential is and start using that potential.
Thanks very much indeed to you all this morning. Sean Duke, the cool scientist from DCU. Josh Loveridge, CEO of Loveridge Digital from Roundwood. We're very proud of him here in County Wicklow. And Damien Mully from Mully Communications in Cork. Thank you very much indeed to you all. Thanks for taking part. That was very interesting. Thanks very much. It's a morning show at East Coast.